Guaso, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to episode 201 of the Third Sub Podcast. I'm your co-host, Alexander Gongi-Bruzik, joined as always by Samuel Rowan. Busy weekend, really. That's all I can say. Certainly for all of us here on the West Coast. I know myself, I had a double CPL weekend. Went all the way out to Langford, British Columbia, tucked into some Pacific Halifax Wanderers. As they say in French, du bon bon. That was a good tactical game. Then on the ferry back, I watched the Vancouver Whitecaps game in full. Also, side note, on BC Ferries, right, it was Canucks versus Oilers for pretty much the top spot in the Pacific Division, and it was Caps, LA Galaxy playing both 7 o'clock that night. Guess one, which one BC Ferries was playing on their TV? It was the Vancouver Whitecaps, so hey, if there's any sign that the Whitecaps hot start starting to get picked up by those around the province, there you go. But hey, they unfortunately had a huge showcase match. The Galaxy always is a big match, especially when it's 1v2. Unfortunately, they came up short, but Sam was at that one while I was out in the island, and then we both reunited on Sunday for some Vancouver FC. My goodness, they got some goals in them, 4 of them to be exact, 4-1 drubbing of Valor. Red card certainly helped, but hey, VFC had already found the net 3 times before that red card. So they were high flying, and I mean, hey, they literally had an eagle in the building. So fitting that. But yeah, busy weekend and another huge one ahead. I mean, I'll talk about my schedule at the end of this episode. It might make some of you guys feel dizzy, but I'm looking forward to it. But of course, Sam, how are you going? How are you doing this week after tucking into a nice little doubleheader of Vancouver soccer?
Yeah, doing fantastic. I mean, Monday was, I needed to decompress a little bit. It's a busy weekend doing the double. You're in for something a little crazier this weekend, but really enjoyed it. And, you know, mixed results, obviously. The Whitecaps not managing to come out on top, but then a pretty triumphant home opener for VFC. So that was fun to take in and really enjoyed my experience out at Willoughby. It was, always good to tick a new stadium, tick a new ground off. Looking forward to going to be tucking in again this Thursday night. So that's going to be fun. We'll maybe talk a little bit about that on the back end. But yeah, in terms of the Whitecaps, I mean, I think still positive signs and still very much this is a team that they're still off to a good start. And this is still a team that can compete at the top of the Western Conference. I don't feel like that is diminished from this past weekend at all. I think that I'm going to shout him out right off the bat here. Caleb Wilkins did a tremendous job in our post-match piece. Hey, you know, this is what happens in these coin flip matches. Sometimes it goes your way. Sometimes it doesn't. Brian White ties it up. The match is there for the taking. Ultimately, maybe the Whitecaps opened up the game a little more than they should have. And, you know, LA Galaxy's talented front four was able to punish the Whitecaps at the back, take advantage of a couple poor moments. And next thing you know, you're down 3-1 and, you know, you've lost at home. So obviously the result disappointing, but I think there's enough to take away from the match to still have a lot of confidence in this team early in the season. Enough positives to think that on the whole, it's going to be a good season, but you know, we'll dive into the nitty gritty a little bit and talk about that. So in terms of this show, we're going to, you know, take a look at what happened against the LA Galaxy, go around MLS, do a little bit of Seattle Sounders preview, another Cascadian matchup, which is always fun. And then also going to talk, you know, what we saw from the opening weekend of the Canadian Premier League, the multiple matches that Alex was at and, you know, between Pacific and VFC, and then maybe take a little look at what's going on in the CPL this weekend. So it's going to be a good show. Episode 201. Yeah. We've eclipsed the 200 mark and now we're just, you know, grinded on with seasons are underway. things are happening, matches to talk about. So looking forward to getting into it as always.
Yeah, for sure. Lots to dive into. Before we do, though, by the way, I just wanted to do a little callback because I don't know if you remember in last episode, I put out a question to say, hey, if there's any sickos out here who've listened all 16,000 minutes, give me a shout. We did get a shout, and I just want to give him a shout because he's my guy, he's your guy as well. You know who it is. Loyal day one listener. It's our friend Brian. He sent me a text saying that he'd listen to all 203 episodes, and I said, first off, like wicked. Second of off, I don't know if I should be happy or concerned because that's an impre like he clocked it out as over 6 days of just listening to us chat. So like on one hand, that is we're very happy, very proud because Brian's top man, and it's great that he's been along for this ride. And I'll be seeing him this weekend, so I'll definitely make sure to I'll sort you out in person when I see you. My guy, but that was just shout out to that. So hey, episode as we had in episode 201, been great to see the support and that people have stuck with us through this journey, and we're excited to continue and see where it takes us. And I guess no better place to start this week than the Whitecaps LA Galaxy match. And man, I feel like the first impression I get from this is there's so many places you can take this because it's like it really just depends on your vibe, who you like, who you don't like. Are you glass half full, glass half empty? Because there's the fact that at the day it was a 3-1 loss. It was a pretty frustrating loss, especially one where, look, there's some facts. The Whitecaps did not hold a lot of possession in the first half. For some, that can be a metric that indicates confidence, that indicates control, that indicates dominance. For others, they don't care as much. Myself personally, I'm in more of the category where, look, at the end of the day, possession is completely useless. You see a tie like today, Real Madrid beats Manchester City. They had no possession. They defended well. They won. That's football sometimes. At the end of the day, it's the quality of chances you create and not what you keep in your own net. But it is a good point that at home, sometimes it can be good to keep possession, to get your fans involved, to frustrate an opponent. The Whitecaps didn't do that. But look, it was nil-nil at halftime. No manager will ever be frustrated with that. Then what you can certainly look at is they got torn apart, goal in the 56th minute. Then they pulled one back 77th minute, and then Paintsil Fagundes in just a 2-minute stretch puts the game away. That's a tough way to lose. And it's tough because it just feels like more of the same for the Whitecaps in the sense that this was a big game, another crowd with over 25,000. People are watching the Whitecaps because, oh, they're first in the West. They're playing second in the West. Let's see what this Whitecaps team's all about. They go out and lose. And I think from a Vancouver fan base, it's a bit of a deja vu. And I think you can kind of feel it with the vibe on social media or saying on the third sub. That was kind of the vibe we're getting that the sky is falling down. And honestly, I can understand that sentiment because it's a very Vancouver just mindset of, oh, there it is, right? Just when you're starting to get hype. But funnily enough, I feel like now that it's been a few days, I'm not all that bothered by a result like this from a Whitecaps perspective, because at the end of the day, they went pretty toe to toe with the Galaxy. Yes, you can be like, oh, well, it's just numbers, but look, they outshot the Galaxy 19-13. They had 7 shots on target to the Galaxy's 13. There's no score effects in that. This was a one goal game until the 82nd minute. It's not like, oh, the Whitecaps were down 2-0 at halftime, so they made a late flurry and came up short. No, in a relatively even game for 82 minutes, they outshot the Galaxy despite their lack of possession. And then I think in the advanced stats, they finished with 2.39 expected goals for the Whitecaps, 2.46 for the Galaxy. Look, that 2.46 is extremely concerning, no doubt, because it feels like the first game they've been really hit like that. They've been so good defensively all year, as we've made sure to stress on this podcast. But at the end of the day, they generated a lot. And I think that's key because sometimes in big matches, immediately what I thought too was the two games against LAFC last year, the one at the end of the season, and then the one at home in the playoffs. I went back just to look out of curiosity. The one in the playoffs at home, the Whitecaps only generated 0.99 expected goals in a must-win game at home against LAFC. And then of course they Bouanga ends up getting a penalty, they win. And then in that last game where it was at home, the Whitecaps were already in the playoffs at that point. But look, a win could have made it that they avoided LAFC, that they didn't have to face them. In that game, they had two expected goals, but if you remember correctly, Ryan Gold missed two penalties, so it was really only about 0.58 expected goals from open play. So typically the White, and that's just, I used those two games because I thought those were very typical big games for the Whitecaps. You show up, you struggle to get your punches in, you end up finishing rather frustrated. I thought in this game, the game plan was bang on. Like, at the end of the day, there are two factors that killed them. Unfortunately for him, because he's been so solid in these big moments, and heck, he had a big moment in this game, Brian White probably should have had more than three goals, if we're going to be completely honest. And the defense just made a couple of mistakes that, again, conceptual errors. Vanni Sartini's his least favorite kind of errors, and for whatever reason, they just decide, I don't know if this was panic, I don't know if this was because, oh, it's a 1-1 game, or if it was 0-0. They opened up the game way too much in the second half. And look, that's what we said heading into this game in our preview. What did we say about the Galaxy? They are dangerous when the game opens up. Keep it tight. Yes, it's at home, whatever. You may feel weird defending. Sometimes you play to your opponent's strengths, and unfortunately, they didn't do that in the second half. So that was a very long-winded answer, Sam, but I think that was a good place to kind of start, at least the vibe of the match.
Yeah, I think you hit on both sides of the main things I wanted to talk about. The first being, I think the pragmatic, the low possession approach works to a T if Brian White finishes one of those chances in the first 45, right? Because, okay, you're down in like the 20s at one point in terms of possession, but LA wasn't really creating anything. Like, Yohei Takaoka was not busy. You're able to hit in a couple moments, exposing LA defensively. Brian White's in front of goal. You know, it's either a free header or a moment where he's got the ball at his feet. And if you're able to find the back of the net in that moment, that's the exact kind of game you want. You go up in the 25th, 30th minute. You stay in your shape. You frustrate the Galaxy. You don't give them the space. And then you find that goal, and then maybe you find a second goal as they start to stretch, as they start to open things up. That's the way Vanny wanted this match to go. That's the way LAFC played them the weekend before. It's clear that this is the response teams have to what the Galaxy are providing at the moment. And, you know, I think that part of the issue, again, of not scoring, not finding that goal earlier, yes, Brian White was able to tie the match up. But when you're getting close to the 80th minute and you've had to defend and be so organized for 77, 78 minutes up until that point, it takes a lot out of you physically. And I think that just once they scored that goal and they wanted to, there was the temptation, I think there was the feeling in the building, like, oh my goodness, this is Vancouver's match to win now. That's truly how it felt from inside BC Place. Like the supporters, the players, everyone, it was like, all right, we're going to go and win this. And I think that in combination with some tired legs from working the way they had in structure for 80 minutes, just they loosened their grips slightly on the match. And we know how dangerous the Galaxy are, and they were able to break through. So to me, the two things kind of, yeah, compounded each other. Not finding a way to score in the first half through Brian White. And then, yes, I think the strategy was the right one, but having to put in so much work tirelessly for 80 minutes, then it meant that those legs were tired when they needed to be a little bit more disciplined. And then they didn't, there were mental lapses. There just wasn't that response, that sharpness when they needed it. So ultimately, to me, that's kind of where the match got away. But as you mentioned, you know, in terms of creating chances, in terms of expected goals, you know, it's in the mid twos for both teams. And I feel like this is one of these ones where if you lose this way in the playoffs, it's like at least you really gave it a run and you traded chances with a team blow for blow. Ultimately, the match didn't go your way. So I like this match because I think the Whitecaps are going to learn from it. This is as we get late in the season, they're playing top teams. You can't always just go full guns blazing. Sometimes you have to be pragmatic and take your chances. I feel like overall the game plan was a good one, but they were just really not being able to find something off those good opportunities they created in the first 45, just left them in a vulnerable position. And, you know, not having Fafa Pico on the pitch for a good portion of that match, someone who could stretch lines, someone who could be a danger, I think that also played a factor. I mean, Fafa Pico quickly becoming a very important part of this team, and he doesn't sound like he's going to be available this weekend. So that's, you know, Vancouver's going to have to prove now that they can go on the road and create without Fafa, which will be really interesting to watch as well.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Another thing to your point, what I find interesting too, just because I was, while you were talking, I was going more in depth in the FUTMOB stats. Something I do find kind of interesting is that first half, because they, I don't go in depth in FUTMOB enough. They split it on first and second half, thankfully. First half, it was 26% possession for the Whitecaps to 74 for the Galaxy. But the Whitecaps had 0.51 XG to LA Galaxy 0.26. They neutralized the Galaxy perfectly, like you mentioned. That backs up 100% what you said by the eye test and, you know, what was seen. Second half, the Whitecaps actually had 55% possession. Again, this isn't a score effects thing where they were trailing for most of it. This is relatively the Whitecaps going toe-to-toe. I think that partly was personnel, because if you think about it, Pedro Vite comes on in the 16th minute. He's naturally someone that, in the flow of the game, he's going to want to put his foot on the ball a little more. What happens at halftime? Sam Adekugbe comes in for Ryan Raposo. What's a fundamental difference between the two? Ryan Raposo, he's someone who wants to take people on 1v1, and he's a final action player, so he'll play a little more direct. You know, Adekugbe is more of a possession player. So interestingly, the Whitecaps naturally, with some of their changes, and I think ended up also kind of naturally tweaking their game plan. And it's funny, because that ended up playing into the Galaxy's favor, because then you look at the numbers, you're like, oh, that's actually like the Whitecaps were holding more possession. They were going toe-to-toe. The Galaxy's not the team you want to go toe-to-toe with. And yeah, it's interesting, because I think it's something to keep an eye on, in the sense that it shows that sometimes you really just have to be reconnaissant of what your opponents will throw at you. Like, again, it's something where there's no shame in respecting the Galaxy transition threat. Like, if you know they're going to transition, why open the doors and let them play their style just because you're at home, or because you have this desire to want to, you know, I don't know. It's again, it's hard to say it's something that the Whitecaps look to do, because both of the changes they made, one was an injury, so they were always going to be forced into a weird choice because it was so early. And then the second one, they kind of had to make a halftime sub if they wanted to be able to spread out their later subs over more manageable windows. So they were both like for like, but yeah, it just feels like, I don't know if this was like an eye test thing. It just feels like there's a point in the game where the Whitecaps kind of shifted their approach. And to be fair, I think it's also, you can't even be mad at it, because I think on another day, it's funny, how simple this sport can be. It can boil down to, okay, maybe if Brian White on that breakaway puts it away with a bit more confidence. Oh, Brian White steals the ball from John McCarthy, just closes his eyes and shoots the ball right away. Or, you know, kind of manipulates the fact that he has a goalkeeper outside the box. Maybe instead of running straight in the box, you force a dog. So something, instead of just kind of rushing the chance, you put that in, it's a whole different game. But yeah, it just felt like the last thought I'd have on this, it just feels like the Whitecaps, maybe this is where, and I think this maybe is kind of ties into Vanni Sartini's comments, because the kind of the theme he gave after the game was very like, we were naive, we were kind of just like inexperienced, we kind of, you know, crap their pants, for lack of a better word. And what I do wonder is, when thinking back and putting all the comments together, putting the stats, putting what I saw, does it feel like maybe the Whitecaps were a bit over eager for a knockout blow and maybe kind of fell over trying to do so, when the game strategy kind of dictated, like, you're a bit of like a Pacquiao here. Just get your little punches in, get your little punches in. If you went on a decision, great, you went on a decision, but you don't want to be going like blow to blow, like a heavyweight clash. And that kind of, maybe it feels like once they got those Brian White chances, they're like, oh yeah, like, we can win this game, let's go for it. And maybe that wasn't the wiser decision. Does that sound crazy to say, Sam, or do you kind of get where I'm going with it there?
Well, again, if we're going to go like complete anti XG here, this is the polar opposite. I'm just going to go with like what I felt in my gut in the stadium. Again, I'll point to the moment where Brian White scored, and the feeling in that stadium was just like, we're gonna go get a winner. That was the feeling. Is like 3 points are on now. And I think the way the Whitecaps played from there on out reflected that. Like they stretched themselves because they were looking for that go-ahead goal. And as we said, that's not the way you play against the Galaxy, right? Like if you turn it into St. Louis versus LA Galaxy 3-3 track meet end to end, the Galaxy scored 2 goals in extra time to steal a point from that match. When matches get like that, that's what those top players do for them. So I feel like it was it, you know, you would say in other matches or in other sports, like, oh, they let their foot off the gas. This was almost like the opposite. They put their foot in the gas too much and kind of, you know, the car started sliding around and it got a little out of control. And I think, again, it's, you know, I think it's easy to say, oh, if they just stayed in structure, stuck with their principles, everything would have been fine. But again, I also think because they played so negatively at times in the first half, holding like 20 something percent of possession, I feel like physically they were maybe a bit limited, a bit tired by the time they got to those late stages. And that maybe, you know, you're a little more vulnerable to being naive when you're really tired. All right. I think if you're fresh, you're sharp, it's a little easier to stick to those tactical principles. So you know, I think it's more complicated than just like a mental naivete. I think it's also because of the way they were forced to play in the first half. You know, it's the Galaxy are a good team this year. They're tough to beat. There's a reason it's been a challenge for other teams so far. But I think you're right that they gradually through that second half got away from what gave them relative success in the first half, even though, you know, the end of the first half in the stadium, you're kind of like, oh my goodness, what was that half of football? But it was good in the sense that, you know, LA's top players really had nothing to take away from it. And that's what had to be mission one, number one for Vancouver.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point about the naivety and the desire they had. Another point, and I'm gonna bring it up because I mean, look, if you're an OG third sub listener, it's been a while since we've gone in this sort of discourse, Sam, and I'm curious to know if you know where I'm going here. The substitutions. I mean, this is the bread and butter of the third sub. So I mean, like, let's go into it. It is kind of curious when you look back. The Whitecaps only made the two subs, right? Like I mentioned, wise of them to make a halftime sub, especially they felt like Raposo just wasn't the sort of player for this game. Like you mentioned a lot, tired legs from defending, tired legs from when the game stretched out. Vanni Sartini's third, fourth, and fifth sub didn't come till the 84th minute after it was already 3-1. And at that point, you're just throwing on bodies. Couldn't, you know, because it felt like the game, you could see the tired legs, 60, 65, 70. Could it not have made more sense? I don't know, to bring in like a Berhalter, especially, you know, with the Kubas on the yellow. That was something that was obviously very big on the broadcast. That as I was watching, could you not have brought in a Levante Johnson? Like, oh, you're deciding, all right, you want to go toe for toe, and they brought on Johnson. Could you not brought him in earlier? That's something else I do kind of wonder, because it's something where Vanni Sartini is typically quite good at getting the timing of his subs right, the selection of his subs have provided a lot of juice this year. Like we talked about recently, Ryan Raposo coming off the bench doing some damage, you know, guys coming in stretching the game. I do find it interesting that, again, like this, they even the subs were almost like a bit naive, because it's in the sense, oh, you bring in a triple sub after the game has kind of already slipped away from you. Could that not have come earlier based on what the game was kind of trending towards? I thought that was a bit interesting.
I mean, I think the point about not bringing in the subs until late is a great one, but I think also something worth considering. We pointed how the Whitecaps kind of changed and held more possession in the second half. If you're trying to play that like grit and grind, hustle, shut things down defensively, going for Adekubi and Vite doesn't necessarily fit that profile, right? Those are more guys in possession that play kind of like pretty football. So yeah, my question is kind of like, where are the scrappers, where are the dogs at? And that would
The
have been
Jermaine Browns.
Javain, Seb Berhalter, and Levante Johnson would be like the three guys that would come to mind if you want to like grit this one out and make life really unenjoyable for the Galaxy, that's where you go. And I understand that's not necessarily flashy. That's not, you know, trying to win the game 4-3, but as we saw, that wasn't the path to victory for Vancouver in this one. And so yeah, I think there's legitimate questions to be asked. Again, my big takeaway from like a tactical perspective was that I like a lot of what Vanny did, but I felt like it was kind of so extreme in the first half that they had to get away from it in the second half. And then when they got away from it in the second half, it went badly. I feel like if they just, you know, you want to limit those Galaxy chances, but I feel like they had to do it a bit more sustainably. And part of the solution to that may have been bringing in different substitutions or just trying to hold a bit more of the ball in the first half, so you're not so run down by the time you get to minute 80. So, you know, I feel like overall this was not Sartini's strongest performance of the year. There were, you know, Toronto FC, he absolutely got the tactics right, but it's also a much weaker team, so it's much easier to get the tactics right. I do think this is one where, yeah, the game plan on the whole was a good one, but I think maybe some of the finer points got away from Sartini and you know, the players obviously in terms of execution as well, but I think it's a two edges of the sword there.
Yeah, well, I think against TFC, they were proactive. They knew TFC's strengths. They knew TFC's weaknesses. They battered down the hatch. They kept the hatch closed. Boom. Game, set, match, 4-0. You're loving life. Top of the West, yada, yada, yada. In this game, the first 45 minutes were very proactive. You knew the Galaxy's strengths. You kind of played to it, almost frustratingly so. Like we mentioned, the lack of possession. But boom, you kept one of the hottest attacks in the league quiet. You know, you're robbing joy of a guy like Ricky Puig, great. What it feels like the second half, though, was it felt very reactive. It felt very reactive in terms of, like we mentioned, the subs.
If we're going to talk boxing, they were absorbing punches. And that rather than getting their hands up and blocking, they were just kind of taking shots, is what it felt like.
Exactly. And even then, like beyond that, it just felt like they were kind of just reacting to everything that was going on. It was like, oh, yeah, we're in this game. Oh, LA's just scored on us. Let's go after it. And then like, oh, we scored. Like, all right. Like, it was just very, it was never like, oh, let's be wary. Let's not forget what the Galaxy's threats are. Let's not forget, heck. Again, this is something where maybe this is too pragmatic of thinking. Is it wild to say that a draw would not have been a terrible result for the Whitecaps? You have a game in hand on pretty much everyone around you. The Galaxy have been kind of, three wins, three draws heading in this game. Look, a draw would not have been again, it's very pragmatic, so I'm not going to say you go there, especially because you do come, you're in a stretch, you're about to play like something ridiculous, like six the next nine on the road or something like that. And, you know, there's going to be some games in there where you're definitely going to be happy to grind out a draw, and maybe because you're at last game of a homestand, you're about to go to a place in Seattle where you haven't won in a very long time. Doesn't matter how bad the Sounders look right now, that's still kind of a mental hurdle they're going to have to get over. I do wonder if that's got the best of them, but at the same time, it's something where it's like, yeah, it's something as little as of a draw would not have been an outrage. Like that's, I don't know, I feel like something like that would not have been a ridiculous result. But look, those are all, it's all hindsight. You could say it is what it is. At the end of the day, the Whitecaps, unfortunately, came up short in this one. But I guess, Sam, are there any other talking points you want to touch on from that game? Because I feel like we had some specific talking points, but I think throughout that discussion, I think we hit on most of them. Look, in terms of individuals, don't have too much really to highlight. It was one of those games where, again, game plan seemed fine. There was a lot of solid performances across the board, really. It was just little breakdowns in the sense of the Whitecaps created the chances for themselves, so the breakdown on the offense just simply comes down to finish your chances. The Whitecaps on, again, I'll go stats nerd, as usual, four big chances, you missed all four of them. You scored the one of your non-big chances. Like at the end of the day, you put two of your big chances in, it's a different game. You put one of your big chances in, it's a different game, let alone missing all four. If I'm going to use a CPL term, it was very York United-esque of the Whitecaps in this, but we'll get to the CPL chatter later. And then, of course, defensively, the first goal, just hurt from I'm thinking, like, if I'm Benny Sartini on the bench, that one would have really hurt just because the Whitecaps had, I think, two really good chances to score. clearance falls to Ali Ahmed. He just miscontrols it kind of unluckily, but because the Whitecaps push numbers forward, Ali cooked them, puts the ball in the net, goal. All right, whatever. It's still a 1-0 game. They tie it 1-1. The second goal was a very frustrating one, I think. Just the fact that, yeah, like they put everyone behind the ball. They were all set up. And then the zonal marking was perfect. Everyone was on the line. Paintsil would have been offside. But unfortunately, Ranko Veselinovic wandered a couple feet behind his line. He plays Paintsil on. Paintsil scores. And then by then, the third goal as well, just the game opened up. Look, those were errors, but overall, everything was fine in that regard. But yeah, Sam, any final thoughts on this weird LA Galaxy game?
Yeah, again, I think to maybe circle back all the way to the beginning, despite the final result, despite the disappointment, this was a huge opportunity to kind of assert their spot atop the West and to build a bunch of positivity in the city. And I understand it's very disappointing in that regard. I still feel like in terms of the football, the maturity, the squad, the development, I feel like the trend is in an upward and positive direction. This feels like a better, more serious contender than we covered last year. Now that's going to have to flesh out over the long term. You know, a lot of matches left in this MLS regular season, but I think even despite, you know, despite dropping points and despite the fact that they're what, like 2-2-1 at home now, which is, you know, not a great start to the season in terms of home record. I feel like the quality in the squad is there, and the performances have felt a level higher this season, or at least shown potential to, you know, kind of, we talked about this team being top three in the West. I feel like that's very much available to them at this point, and that, you know, shouldn't let one loss to a very good team kind of dissuade you from that position at this early stage.
Yeah, and I think a lot of what went wrong is very correctable. Like, it's not, I mean, I guess it's maybe a bit of deja vu offensively of finish your chances, and that, you know, the darned at this point, some I would not blame Whitecaps fans if the word XG just, you know, gives them shivers, because they keep hearing, oh, they keep generating XG but not finishing. But look, at the end of the day, those were very correctable moments. And you know what? Fittingly, I think a bit of road play is what the doctor ordered for this Whitecaps team. I think for whatever reason, as we saw, I know it's, again, you can argue the quality of opposition based on how poor San Jose and Dallas have looked this year. They looked more comfortable, arguably, on the road in both of those games. Like, they almost just seem set up to just, the way they're playing, just go frustrate on the road and be an annoying team that could defend very well, hit on the counter, but also play in possession and frustrate home teams. Whereas sometimes at home, it feels like maybe that pressure can almost get to them. Sometimes it's like that, like we said in the Galaxy game, that knockout pressure, the crowd's cheering you on, you just score an equalizer, go for it. Whereas on the road, you're like, in a moment like that, there's never any pressure for you. So I do wonder if maybe some road games will be what the doctor ordered. It's so funny to say that after how the last like 5 years of the Whitecaps playing on the road have gone. But that's what we said. It's a different team. And I think obviously this stretch will prove that. Speaking of, we'll preview the next game with the Seattle Sounders in a minute. Oh, in five, at least. We'll try our best, because from here, we're going to move on, as usual, to Around MLS in five. To be honest, this one actually, for once, might be closer to 5 minutes, because it was a bit of a weird weekend in MLS. Didn't get tucked into too much, just because with all my moving around of going to the island and, you know, CPL opening weekend and then the UBFC on Sunday. Still, of course, kept an eye on a few games. We only have two on here, just because they're very relevant for the West. First off, Minnesota, kind of on a bit of a mini slump, no pun intended there, and trouble in paradise with the whole Emmanuel Reynoso news. For those unfamiliar, their star number 10 had a green card appointment that he just no-showed. And apparently that happened to him last year, and that didn't get around or didn't get out. So clearly it sounds like he's not very... See, it doesn't sound like we'll be seeing much of him anymore in there. And that's tough, because he's such a key piece. They've kind of slumped a bit. They did lose 2-1 to the Houston Dynamo. The Dynamo are starting to look good this year. And I think what's scary is that last year was very goals fueled. That was their main rise. Like they could score with the best of them. And they look pretty good defensively. And all of a sudden, I'm looking among the teams in the West. Might it be crazy to say the Dynamo are the team that have impressed me the most? Like the Galaxy, can score with the best of them. But even in this game with the Whitecaps finished their chance. This is a 4-3 barn burner, a 3-3 barn burner. That's what you get with the Galaxy. LAFC just continues to look weirdly off. Portland Timbers seem to have flaws. We talked about the Sounders, talked about all the other teams. But quietly, Houston is a team that gets things done at both ends. And right now, especially defensively, are we sleeping on the Dynamo?
I mean, yeah, I think they showed last year what they can do in playoffs and US Open Cup, and just in the MLS regular season, that they could be a very solid, if not, bordering on elite team. I think kind of like the Whitecaps, like in that not necessarily top contender, but in that group below that, if they are able to put things together, can really contend. And yeah, Minnesota, I think some of those sustainability questions we had at the beginning of the year maybe coming to a bit of a head at this point, bit of a market correction. I still think Mini, even without Reynoso, is a solid team in the West and will certainly be in the mix. I mean, the other team that you didn't mention that I would throw in there is the Colorado Rapids. Yeah, off to a poor start opening weekend, but since then, pretty darn good, took care of business against San Jose. Yes, poor San Jose is getting beat up on, but that's still 3 road points for the Rapids. And they seem to be coming into form at a good time. So I think that's a team to watch out for. And certainly given where the Rapids have been the last couple seasons, that's a huge step in the right direction. And yeah, as you mentioned, kind of a weird weekend. I mean, a couple nil-nil draws, the Seattle Sounders being one of those teams, and a nil-nil draw with FC Dallas. And then the other ones we sort of looked at were SKC St. Louis, which is your good old Midwest rivalry, and then the Cali Classico as well. Are those, sorry, am I reading those? Those might be that's the preview content. I'm messing up, so don't mind that. We'll circle back to that in a minute. No, the other one, of course, was Portland LAFC. You mentioned LAFC just like weirdly off form this season. And then in this one, the big talking point, especially for Vancouver Whitecaps supporters, was the Max Crépeau red card. I mean, it feels like the Galaxy last weekend and then the Timbers this weekend, hard done by with some decisions against LAFC. Yeah, was that really a dog show moment for Crépeau? I don't know. Was Bouanga even offside? Is a great question. Was the foul inside the box, outside the box? Another great question. That was a hectic match. LAFC also had a goal taken off right at the end of the match for a foul, which Kamal Miller went down in the box, but it really just looked like a 50-50. If anything, Miller was like a little bit behind and just kind of went down to ground. So a very, very weird match. I think that neither Portland nor LAFC is inspiring a ton of confidence at the moment. They're very hectic teams that don't seem that reliable week to week right now. And at least that's my impression.
Yeah, it's really tough to get a gauge because it feels like the talent's there for both teams. Like, man, just Evander, when he wants, you can just see he can take over games for Portland, but then it just feels like defensively they're all over the shop. And that's a surprise for Portland because they made the defensive makeover. But for whatever reason, it feels like the last few weeks they've just been so sloppy. Like you saw with the Whitecaps game, like way sloppier than a back line of their quality should look when you have a Crépeau in goal on a Miller and McGraw was in that game. He's been a bit injured since, or at least out of the lineup. But it's just, yeah, it's so oddly sloppy. But ditto with LAFC. It just feels like, for whatever reason, they've been off. For what it's worth, though, what's scary with LAFC, they currently lead MLS in expected goal difference. So I do wonder if a bit of a market correction is kind of due, because in particular, they're kind of overperforming or they're underperforming offensively by a good margin. And when you have a team with Bouanga in it and some other heavy hitters, Tillman can score goals from the midfield, Bogish, etc. feels like they're due a bit of a market correction. But yeah, that's just it's that's a fair way to sum up how it's gone for both them. And then yeah, Portland, it just feels like right now, what's wild is they're currently they've allowed 14.2 XG in 8 games. It's just too open at the back right now. And that's not really, I guess, on their back line in a sense, because maybe it's just, you know, the midfield in front of them, it just gets too open at times. But until they fix that, it's going to be tough for them to push up in the West. So curious to see how that goes, because, yeah, right now the West continues to remain without a truly convincing team. Another team I didn't throw in that mix, who I actually, funny enough, because they beat the Whitecaps, sleeping on RSL also, I think, as well. They're actually third in expected goal difference in the conference. They play good soccer. They're relatively low event defensively, good enough offensively to make things happen. There's just not enough of that in the West right now. It feels like right now that there's two schools of thought. Either you generate chances by the boatload, you give them up by the boatload, or it's you're just too low event offensively and too low event defensively, and you kind of end up in a no man's land. For example, that's SKC, who are like fourth last in expected goals for, but they actually have a really good defensive record. Like, it's just such a weird mix of there's no team that's doing what they should be doing at both ends. The closest ones, funnily enough, and at least the stats are LAFC and Seattle. Seattle has really good underlying numbers, so maybe something to watch, that maybe a market correction could come good against the Whitecaps, which would be typical, wouldn't it? But yeah, at the moment, no Western Conference team has managed to blend that perfect mix of playing well by the numbers and getting wins on the board. That feels like each one has a flaw, but I guess that's also the beauty of MLS, is that there are no teams that are ever flawless. I mean, although the Columbus Crew last year are pretty damn close, but we'll see how it goes. Just this weekend, though, quickly to go through, like you mentioned, SKC St. Louis in the, what do you want to call it, El Barbecuo or something like that. I know some teams in Texas and teams in Nashville. Well, Nashville SC will want something to say about it, but all I know is the barbecue is damn good out there in the Midwest. You know, SKC home of Ted Lasso. And then, of course, you got a Cali Clasico at San Jose LA Galaxy. That one could be big for the Galaxy, because I'd put good money on them pummeling the Earthquakes and continuing to sit top of the West. The Whitecaps lose, all of a sudden the Galaxy could have an even bigger perch atop the West. But also conversely, man, this, we say it every week, this Earthquakes team's due for some sort of good vibes soon, right? If not, one has to imagine Luchi Gonzalez might be on the hot seat very, very soon if this keeps up, if not already.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that's, hopefully the Earthquakes can do the Whitecaps a favor this upcoming weekend. And yeah, I mean, after the chaos in Kansas City for that Inter-Miami matchup, then they now have a rivalry match, and we've kind of seen again that'll be the convergence of different philosophies. You know, St. Louis keeping things pretty wide open and relying on Roman Berkey at the back to bail them out, but KC more on the low event, keep things composed. And but obviously they've got, you know, some dynamic playmakers that can create on their own from time to time. So yeah, not all, we were looking through it and not a ton of standout matchups this weekend in MLS upcoming. Some like interconference stuff that's not particularly mouthwatering. And also we were looking into, you know, just some weird iterations of the schedule. So lots of like return matchups or like second matchups that we've already seen. So Charlotte and TFC have played each other twice. LAFC and Portland are playing again the next weekend after this one. So that'll be the second time they've played. Vancouver's going to be in Seattle again in a couple weeks. So just some strange early season schedule permutations that I guess there must be some logic behind it, but certainly like for the Whitecaps, we were talking about this before the show, for an away day, it just doesn't make sense to have both trips down to Seattle so close together in the season. You'd like one in the spring, one in the fall, but alas, we can't have nice things apparently.
Yeah, this schedule is just ridiculous. I wanted to give a second of that, because I'm just looking through the Whitecaps schedule. They play in Seattle more times than they play in Vancouver over the next six games. Like that just feels puzzling that they play twice in Seattle, once in Vancouver. And first off, spread out the Seattle games. Those are ones where fans will travel. It's rivalry matches. And then also the second Seattle games on May long weekend, which I know can sometimes, I guess, in theory, be easier for travel. But good luck to all those who will be making that trek down. Some other weird facts that I've just realized looking through. The Whitecaps play Colorado twice in 2 weeks. Like they play on May 15th in Colorado, then June 1st at home. Meaning they'll have played Colorado twice and Seattle twice before they even play their first game against Seattle or against St. Louis, sorry. And who's St. Louis? They then play twice in 2 weeks. They're playing Portland twice already by June 22nd. That's it. They'll have played three different teams twice before they've even gotten to some Western Conference matchups like St. Louis. They don't play the Dynamo for the first time, another conference matchup all the way till July 20th. By then, they'll have played Kansas twice, St. Louis twice. Like it just, I'm looking across the board here, and there's just no rhyme or reason to any of it. And I don't know. I thought whatever the schedule maker has been going on, it's just funny in a week like this where it just feels like there's no standout matchups. It feels like something went a little wrong here. So we'll keep an eye out because man, it just feels like it's gonna be. What I love about, like, you know, like, say, I'll just use the top of my head. Well, I guess any top five league in Europe, at least, because they all have similar schedules. Yep, there's 20 teams. You play all 19 in one set of games, 1 to 19. You're never playing, like, I don't know, you're never seeing Arsenal-Chelsea twice. You're never seeing Bayern versus Dortmund twice. And then you have your second round of fixtures where it's like, all right, you've played everyone once. You get everyone again. And I love that because the reality is across the season, there's ebbs and flows, there's injuries, teams get hot, teams get cold, international breaks, etc. It just feels very weird that a team could get, you know, you could get a team twice in 2 weeks and maybe they're in a low moment. You get 6 points off them. That could just really be rough for a team's season, right? Like that sort of stuff could really catch up to them along the season. That just kind of feels like a bit of a weird competitive balance because at the end of the day, ideally, you'd like them to spread it out enough. And like they do a great job with Caps and RSL. The Caps got caught by RSL, but they don't play each other till like September. By then, we'll see two very different variations of themselves. They'll end up helping both teams in their respective playoff pushes see more of that. But it's just, it makes no sense to have these constant splits of, oh, we play you now, we're playing you 2 weeks later. Very, very strange.
Yeah. I mean, certainly not the only thing puzzling about the way Major League Soccer moves and operates, but you add it to the list, I think. Anyways, that was kind of a look back at this week in MLS action and what's upcoming this weekend. Apologies for me diving into the previews there before we finish the recaps, but yeah, alas, we move. And yeah, SKC, St. Louis, and Cali Classico, I guess, at least from our view, the ones to maybe watch out for outside the Whitecaps this weekend. But Alex, that takes us to Seattle Sounders preview. This is obviously, you know, second Cascadian match of the season for Vancouver. The first one went well, a 3-2 win over the Timbers. But this time they're headed down the I-5 to Lumen Field, which we've mentioned on several occasions. You know, it's been a very long time since Vancouver has secured all 3 points in that building. But this is a Seattle team that is not off to a great start, that looks to be struggling, that is good on the ball, but doesn't necessarily convert that possession into dangerous chances. And even when they do convert that possession into dangerous chances, they don't score those chances as much as they should. You look at the Sounders from a statistical perspective, and, you know, especially if you take away their 5-0 win against CF Montreal 2 weeks ago, I think they have 4 goals in 6 games, which kind of tells you the story of their season so far, right? With Raul Ruiz Diaz, Jordan Morris, Christian Roldan, Albert Rusnak, Leo Chu, like you would expect more goals than that, but they seem to be less than the sum of their parts. offensively, still an elite defensive team. Alex, you mentioned the goal difference, and they're still like rock solid at the back, not allowing much. And even when they had, it's been sort of, I think, a bit fortuitous for the opposition. But ultimately, just scoring more than a goal on a consistent basis has been a challenge for this team so far this season. So that's something they're going to have to figure out. Obviously, getting Pedro de la Vega back will be huge for Seattle, and should be a difference maker. Also, Yao Paulo coming back to full fitness is something I think they've missed in the midfield. And Alex, you mentioned before on the show how they're a much different team when that midfielder is in the lineup. So I think there's reasons to believe that Seattle's going to get this at least somewhat figured out, but the consistency in terms of goal scoring has been like a multi-year problem, and they still haven't really found their way out of the abyss in that respect. So I hesitate to say that this match is here for the taking, but I think the way that the Sounders profile plays into the way Vancouver likes to defend. Keep teams to the outside, don't allow high quality scoring chances. Have that back three defend their zones, defend the box, and just kind of keep the game in front of them. This feels like a much better matchup for the Whitecaps than the Galaxy were last weekend. It just obviously there's the challenge of going down the road and trying to get a win in that stadium, which I think has to be respected no matter what moment these teams are in.
Yeah, that's why it's funny. I feel like the challenge in this game is more psychological than it is the two teams at hand, right? It's not like you were looking at this like Caps Galaxy game, which in theory, a harder game, more important, 1v2, etc. Yeah, that was one where you're like, all right, at the very least, you're confident the Whitecaps would go out and give an honest go. They did, as we mentioned, they just came up short in a few areas. With Seattle, it just feels like psychologically the Sounders have just kicked their butt in Seattle. Because then it's funny enough, then you split. The Whitecaps have been pretty decent against them at home. It's been a really like home dominant series as of late. I'd say that's pretty fair. But yeah, I guess just for some context, because I pulled up the numbers here while you were you're talking there, Sam. Just for those unfamiliar, the Whitecaps last won in Seattle on March 19th, wait for this, 2016. You know how long that is ago? Since then, the Sounders have gone on to win two MLS Cups, a Champions League. For fun, I found the lineups in that game. I'm just going to roll through both of them and you can laugh. Let's start with the Sounders. Stefan Fry's in goal, so a familiar face. He'll be in goal on Saturday. Their back four was Tyrone Mears, Zach Scott, Chad Marshall, and Jovin Jones. Just like, wow, what a blast from the past that is. Their midfield double pivot was Christian Roldan, so he'll still be there, and Ozzie Alonso, the Cuban midfielder. They're 4-2-3-1, as they kind of, they haven't really changed from. Siggy Schmidt was on the bench, so rest in peace, a legend of MLS, great coach that he was. He had the 4-2-3-1. Their three was Jordan Morris, so another familiar face. Shout out to Seattle for creating some continuity in MLS. They had Andreas Ivanschitz in the number 10, because this is before like Nico Ladero and everything. Clint Dempsey, now pundit, was on the wing for them, and then their striker was he doesn't even have a wiki. I can't even click on him. It's just En Valdez, whoever the heck En Valdez is. So this is weirdly enough, before, I guess it would have, it's Nelson Valdez. There we go. I found it. Former Borussia Dortmund striker. So this was like that weird in between like Obafemi Martins and like, I guess then it would have been like Raul Diaz and everyone. So wow, what a lineup that is. Meanwhile, for the Whitecaps, they had David Oestedt in goal. They were playing a 4-4-2 under Carl Robinson. Man, what a time it was. Fraser Aird was the right back. Kendall Waston was paired with Tim Parker. Jordan Harvey was holding down the left back. Then you had a four of Christian Bolaños, Pedro Morales, who scored a brace of penalties. Matias Laba and Kakuta Mane. In the front two was Blas Perez and Octavio Rivero. Some of the names on the bench for the Whitecaps include a Christian Teixeira, an Andrew Jacobson. Sam Adekugbe was still with the Whitecaps the last time they won. So, hey, maybe the return of Sam is exactly what they needed. Cole Seiler and Paolo Tarnaghi as well. Some other familiar names. Like, it's been a while. It's to have an exact number. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 games that the Whitecaps have either lost or drawn in Seattle. So, yeah, it really feels like before you even look at what the Sounders have, even what you look like the matchups, that's a pretty big like psychological hurdle to overcome, especially that it's a derby, especially, you know, that it's going to be a strong crowd as it always is. It's definitely something they're going to have to get over.
Yeah, maybe Sam Adekugbe can give his teammates some tips. That's that's crazy that it goes back that far that Sam was still a member of the Whitecaps on his first stint the last time they managed to get a win down in Seattle. And man, that lineup's a blast from the past. So yeah, that's I think that is, you know, in large part the challenge that lies in front of this Whitecaps team, right? It's just getting over that mental psychological hurdle. But again, I think they come in this season, I think, with a improved toolbox to deal with these kinds of outings. I think that this team has matured tactically to the point where I think they can handle it. And kind of pick their spots to exploit Seattle's weaknesses, but also, you know, go out and find themselves a goal while not stretching themselves too thin at the back. And I hope that in this match, if everything goes right for Vancouver, that defensive structure, those improvements they have made shine through, as opposed to what we saw late on against the Galaxy, which was straying away from those principles and leaving themselves exposed in key moments. So I think your point earlier, Alex, was a good one, that almost the intensity, the mentality of going out in the road might help in that regard, right? You don't have to go chase a goal. You just have to kind of, it's us against the world, and stick to our game, stick to our principles, and we'll be fine. And if you're going to go earn a very difficult 3 points down Seattle, I feel like you have to have that hardened road mentality.
Well, I think what's important to note is that the pressure is on Seattle. They're currently in 12th in the West with 6 points. They do have a game in hand. So if they win this, all of a sudden they're just, you know, 1 point off the playoff line with how tight things are. The pressure is going to be on them to go and chase this game and get a result, and especially the fact that they're not scoring a lot of goals. It's like you mentioned, they're pretty darn elite defensively. They've only allowed 7 goals in 7 games. Like, that's pretty darn good. That's the lowest amount or number of goals allowed in the West. The only problem is they've scored 9, which is, second lowest other than FC Dallas. And their unfortunately putrid offense saw Alan Velasco and company down there. So for them, the pressure is going to be on to go score. You're at home, you're playing a rival, but go on the front foot, play in possession. And like we mentioned, that kind of suits the Whitecaps right now. It's tough. They're missing Fafa Pico because he's tailor-made for this game. And I do wonder if we're likely to see if Levante Johnston start or Ali Ahmed start up front just to offer a bit of that transitional threat. But the pressure is on the Sounders to go score. And for the most part, with the Whitecaps being pretty good defensively, like we mentioned, the Whitecaps being comfortable in sitting deep. And thirdly, Seattle's goal-scoring struggles. There's no shame in the Whitecaps sitting back and going and hitting on the counter. And heck, because based on paper, this has a nil-nil game written all over it. So for the Whitecaps, let it be a nil-nil game. There is no pressure for you to get much more than that. And then pounce when the time is right. Maybe Seattle gets desperate and, you know, and Alex Roldan ends up, you know, shifting too far from right back, opening up an Ali Ahmed to run, or, you know, Nuhu as well on a left back. He likes to get forward. So it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, I mean, at the same time, we also have to respect this is a good Sounders team, like you mentioned, on paper. Like, this is a good team. I think they'll be immensely helped by the fact that João Paulo looks to be in back in some capacity in the last game against Dallas. He played 25 off the bench. I wonder if that'll be enough for him to at least get a start in this game, if not go 45. they just always look night and day when he's in the lineup versus when he's not. You know, about the 22 season where I won a Champions League, but then because João Paulo got injured in that final, they just struggled the rest of the year without him. That's something to keep an eye on. Because, yeah, I think that's the important thing just to stick with. But it's a good Seattle team, but it's a Seattle team under pressure. So by respecting their threat and also respecting the fact they have all the pressure, that's, I think, where the Whitecaps could really thrive in this matchup.
Well, I think we've, as we've outlined throughout the season so far, you know, maybe not quite as dynamic in attack, but when the Whitecaps are able to hit in those moments, they have looked very dangerous. Now, a big part of that has been Fafa Pico. So without that, I think we can kind of shift maybe a little bit to how the Whitecaps set up for this one. And I would echo your thought that, I mean, it almost goes without saying, although this, you know, this might age poorly when we see the lineup sheet on the weekend, but they can't go with Demir Krylak up front in this match, can they? I just don't feel like that gives them the opportunity to take advantage of those moments when they do come about. I feel like either Ahmed up front or Levante Johnson, you need someone of pace there to hit in those moments when you see those opportunities.
Seattle Sounders average 55% possession. They're going to want to hold the ball and break you down. This is a game that you want speed and transition. I think, unfortunately, this isn't a game for Demir Krylak. This isn't a game where you're breaking down a team and you need that quality he brings. You're going to need some legs. It's going to be, that's why it's for the one for the Whitecaps. You're going to have to predict for it to be gummy. Like, you're going to have to eat a lot of possession, eat crosses, hit in transition. And again, it's tough for Krylak because, I mean, as we'll continue to say, the quality's there. I thought he looked good in the role he had off the bench in the against the Galaxy. Should have scored, but hey, he was lively and dangerous. That's in these sorts of game, that seems to be where he can thrive. You come on when all the legs are tired, he has the quality to make a difference. Just unfortunately from the start, when you're going to be asking him to stretch the field a lot, I think, you know, it's going to come down to some of that speed. Where I'm curious though is, I guess, what that front three is going to look like. So, you know, White and Gold is going to be there. So who's that third? And conversely, what's the wing back situation? Because all of a sudden Sam Adekugbe went 45. Usually that means the next progression is for him to start and go 60. Does he have that in him? Do you see a start for him in this game? Does Shop stay at wing back after being dropped in at the midfield? But then does that mean a Pedro Vite comes in? Do we see Vanni Sartini return to a familiar combo that worked against the Sounders last year and go Kubas Berhalter maybe to mix things up? It feels like that midfield four where all the questions are at. Because again, I think White and Gold, as usual, write themselves in pen. Taco can goal, I think, with Utvik. I can't imagine. I don't know what his health status is. If he is back, then I'd throw him in the mix. Otherwise, I think the back three, as usual, pretty straightforward. But that midfield four, other than Kubas, it could go literally any way. And I think that creates so many interesting questions.
So I'll have to double check on this. But as per Hard Journalist today at training, I think the only update was on Fafa not being a participant. So I do believe that Utvik was close to being back at the end of last week. So I do believe he's back at training, though I'm not 100% in that. Whether he's actually available this weekend is a question. I think if he's match fit and ready to go, I wouldn't be shocked if Utvik slots back in, especially given the nature of this match down in Seattle. And I think they like what they saw from him in his debut start. So yeah, I guess it just depends on whether he's fit and kind of up to training this week and stylistic matchups on whether or not you want to take Laborda or Blackman out. But I guess just for safety's sake, I'll kind of go the same back four. So Takaoka in goal, Laborda and Blackman, Ranko in the middle. Yeah, the midfield four is interesting. I'm going to go back with Vite and Kubas in the center with Schopf out in a wide role, and maybe you throw a Javane Brown in as your other wide midfielder. You know, if you want to get stuck in defensively, I also think that, you know, Sam is a shout given the fact that he's played more recently. I feel like it kind of goes maybe Adekubi and Schopf is the more likely combination. But again, I just don't know how I feel about that in terms of if you're going to have to sit and absorb some pressure at times, albeit not this high intensity pressure. It's going to be more just like Seattle trying to surround the box and create chances. You know, this is a different high possession unit than the Galaxy. So that's important to keep in mind. And then up front, I feel like I don't know if the confidence is there with Lavonte Johnson at the moment. So my sense is that Ali Ahmed plays in the front three, but that remains to be seen. So yeah, I think either Adekubi, maybe Brown in the mix, and then probably Ali Ahmed up front. Watch out for Utvik if he's fully fit, perhaps to slot in for one of those center backs.
Well, then, for the sake of being different, I'll throw a few tweaks that I'd see. I think again, Takoko in goal, elementary, but can't forget to throw him in. I think Utvik slots in for a Blackman just because again, I think it's very interesting. Utvik comes in, Whitecaps keep a clean sheet. Utvik picks up a knock. He comes out. The Whitecaps concede three goals, all originating from Blackman's side. Not saying it's a matter of all right. This is Blackman's fault, but I do find it interesting that, you know, like against Portland, where Blackman was truly made two conceptual errors. I wonder if Utvik could kind of come in and be like, all right, well, look, Utvik did a job down the left, reward him for that. So that's just something I could see. And then Laborda and Ranko stick in. And then as for the four, I have a feeling for whatever reason about that Kubas Berhalter pivot. I think it could just make sense to gum up the middle in a game like this, especially if Paolo's starting, for example, Rusnak, Atencio, like those are guys that are going to be able to hurt you in possession. You know, going for that Kubas Berhalter double might be the way to just kind of limit that, not get too, you know, have that mix of, all right, they're going to do their job defensively. And then going forward, you get something a bit different. At wingback, that leads to interesting questions. What I realized, I don't expect an Adekugbe start. It is still turf. I think you can get 45 out of him. I just say hit, the next game they play is Red Bulls away. That's grass. That gives you another week of giving him 45. By then, like you could be very confident to give him a start if all goes well. So I do wonder if that might make more sense, just as you continue to manage him. So because of that, what I think is. This is either, I think, at right back, like you mentioned, I could very well see a Jervaine Brown start. I see that. But that left, I could either see Schopf stay out there and he continues to do his thing, or we haven't seen him in a while. This could be a Luis Martins game. You know, maybe something where you come in, you get a bit more of that natural left wing back. I could see it go either way. I'd probably edge Schopf in that and go Berhalter, Kubas, Schopf, and then Brown on the right, but I could see a Martinez sneak in there. And then, yeah, I think it's going to be White, Gault, Ahmed. So I'll be interested to see because I, again, Krylak could sneak in there. Again, like I said, this doesn't feel like the game for him. So I'd be surprised to see it. But really, that four there, and the back, there's some interesting decisions to make between an Utvik, between a Martinez versus Schopf versus a Brown versus a Raposa, too. Because, for example, if you go Martins, you can it would make sense to throw a Raposo in just to, you know, maybe do that thing where Ahmed's on the left, Raposo's on the right. You get a bit more of a dual wide threat. Whereas if you go Brown and Martins, that might be a bit too much in terms of the defensive side versus the attack. So then I think if Brown starts, then you got Schopf. So I think it's funny. I think it'll be like a pair. If you see Brown, I could see Schopf. If I see Martins, I could see Raposo. That's kind of it feels like it's kind of all matchup dependent.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that gives you a sense of where we're thinking and how the Whitecaps might set up. And I think, you know, whether it's Martins or Raposo or Brown or Schopf that doesn't find themselves in the starting 11, including Adekubi as well, those other guys will have a role to play off the bench in this match. Because yeah, I think you're gonna want to keep the intensity high. You're gonna want to keep things organized, and I think Vanni Sartini will probably be keen too to, you know, not let those subs come after the Whitecaps are down 3-1 again. He'll try to be out in front of it this week. So Something to watch out for. I mean, Alex, do we want to dive into predictions now? I mean, it would be very bold to predict the first win since 2016. I think I'm gonna go for the 1-1 draw that maybe the Whitecaps should have produced this past weekend against the LA Galaxy. That's my bet. I think they're gonna go play really well down in Seattle, but maybe just not quite get that extra goal to push them over the top.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's something where it would be extremely bold to predict a first win. And obviously we both got a bit burned. At least I did, because I predicted a win, 2-1 win. You went for what against the Galaxy? It was like a 3-2 win or something like that. Yeah, so you went for a bit more of the high event. You were certainly right in the theory. I thought it was lower event. It was going to be lower event than it was. And I guess at the first half I looked great, and then second half the game tipped more towards what you predicted. Oof. I'd honestly, if I'm going to make one, I'm going a nil nil. I just struggle to see a reality in which the Whitecaps break the slump right now. But at the same time, like, I think a nil nil, it's one where the Whitecaps take their chance. It could easily be a 1-0, but I think it's something where this could be a good chance for them to return to form defensively, continue to do well on the road. But then they end up just maybe not getting that one chance at the other end. Stefan Fry makes a big save. So I'll go nil nil, a bit more pragmatic. But you know what? They play twice in Seattle over the next couple weeks. What I'll say is, I have a feeling they're going to win one of those two. I feel like they're long overdue. I don't know if in terms of putting a prediction out, I just would struggle to put my name on this one, but I wouldn't be surprised. I feel like they're just so due. But like we mentioned, it's a psychological hurdle they have to get over. And I'm going to be putting a prediction on it. It's hard to say with supreme confidence. Like, I'm going to go full guarantee they're going down to win in Seattle this week. Not yet. Maybe next time.
I was going to say, I think if we see positive signs in this match, then the green light would be there. But I think, as you mentioned, there's a mental hurdle as much as a physical or a tactical one. And I think you just want to see Vancouver go down to Seattle and demonstrate a winning mentality, even if that doesn't result in 3 points at the end of the day. So looking forward to that this weekend. Going to be a good one. Alex, you'll be in there in person, so be able to give us all the details from behind the scenes at Lumen Field. But I mean, any final comments, or are we ready to dive into the first weekend of Canadian Premier League action, which was fun to be a part of, entertaining, ups and downs, controversial moments, all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, definitely good to be back in the Canadian Premier League action. The league is back, year six. Good double BC doubleheader, which I'm never going to complain about from my perspective, of course, getting the head out to both games. But yeah, lots to dive into for those who didn't get a chance to follow the action. The weekend opened with York United heading on the road to Atletico Ottawa making all the big signings. York United, though, was the team that really impressed on the game, and they should have won. They should have went up 2-0 in the first half, missed an absolute sitter. Then in the second half, they got their goal, could have made it 2-0. But then, as you know, sometimes big players win big games. And for Ottawa, that was Manny Aparicio, former Pacific Man, ended up bagging the equalizer, and then he assisted hometown boy Chris Hordeck. Ottawa won 2-1. And then game number two, Forge Cavalry finals rematch. This one was spooky because at the end of 2023, CPL final, Ali Moussi scored in the 101st minute to give Cavalry the lead. Betty Badibanga and Tristan Borges scored 6 minutes apart to win that one 2-1 as they claimed their fourth North Star Cup. This year, opening day, Cavalry takes the lead through Sergio Camargo, and then Tristan Borges and Betty Badibanga scored twice in a 6 minute span to win 2-1. So Forge, for the first time ever, win on opening day, which I find to be a hilarious stat that, like, this is a team that's won a regular season title, that's won four playoffs, yet they've never won on opening day. So either this is going to curse them and they're going to miss the playoffs, or they're going to win a double this year. I think this can only mean one of two things. Then, of course, the last game of those, It's the one I was at after tucking into those games on my phone on the way to the island. It was Pacific versus Halifax, bit of a new look Pacific team. Same old Pacific though. James Merriman had them, organized, disciplined. The Wanderers looked extremely organized and disciplined. At the end, the only thing that was able to split them was a bit of a rash Julian Dunn penalty. Eamon Salouf put it away 1-0. And then lastly, of course, this weekend, as we mentioned, on Sunday, Sam and I made it out to Langley. Valor versus Vancouver, the bottom two teams from last year, a battle of the VFCs. Also, this kind of just dawned on me, and I didn't notice, but the schedule was 1v2 from last year, 3v4 from last year, 5v6, 7v8. So interesting nugget from the schedule makers. I just clocked that. It's actually kind of hilarious. And yeah, very funny. In the battle of the two bottom two teams from last year, the battle of VFC, Valor got the hot start. A lot of people predicting Valor at the bottom of the table. A beautiful cross from Temi Antonoglu. He ended up finding, I think it was Jordy Swibble at the back post. Nice header. But then it was just all Vancouver. Moses Dyer opened his account to tie the game right before halftime. Paris G scored a thundercracker from about 30 yards to in front of his hometown family, his team, to make it 2-1. And then from there, Gabby Batar made it 3-1. And David Norman Jr., former Whitecap back in BC, he ended up scoring to round it off and finish off a pretty entertaining weekend, especially for all the home fans, because every single one went home celebrating a home team win. So it was a weekend of home cooking in the CPL.
Yeah, I guess I'll pick up where you left off. I mean, I don't have the York Ottawa one was not one that I tucked into, so I won't have much to add there. Pacific Halifax, I mean, good match. I think some interesting tactical notes from Patrice Geyser, and looking forward to seeing that Thursday night in Langley. That's going to be a good matchup. And I thought that Halifax, really, in terms of like possession, in terms of chance creation, in terms of kind of game flow and stuff like that, was probably the better team. But Pacific, showing their grit and showing their quality from a penalty spot, finding a way to get all 3 points in that one. And I think, shows why, despite our concerns about Pacific's roster, they're still really well coached. They still they have this winning pedigree that I think can propel them a good ways in this CPL season. The Cavalry Forge one, I mean, that's spooky stuff. Forge just, I don't know how you sink them. They're just, they're a tricky team. And Cavalry has to feel incredibly snake bitten at the moment. I'm sure they'll cruise throughout most of the rest of this regular season, but that one's gonna haunt them until they get a revenge chance. And then for the match I was in attendance, Valor and Vancouver FC. I mean, sure, a bit of a slow start. Ashwin Gottlieb said that, I think the pressure of playing in front of friends and family in the first 30 minutes was a real thing, where guys were just, the grip was a little bit tight. The movement was a little stiff. They looked like they felt the nerves. And almost that opening goal for Valor, I feel like, pop the cap on the bottle. Like it relieved all that pressure. It was like, okay, we got scored on. Let's regroup. Let's focus. Let's play the way we want to play. And really, from that moment on, Vancouver FC took over the match and cruised from there. I mean, they really good moments in possession. Moses Dyer finds a goal on debut before the half, and all of a sudden now it's 1-1, and it's like, all right, Vancouver had to feel good that we had a bit of a moment of weakness. We recovered from it. We found a goal. Now we can go into the second half. And then Paris G just decides to uncork one from well outside the area, being the Valor keeper at the near post, and seeing him run towards the bench and like the emotional, just, huge moment that was, I think, not only for Paris, but for his, his teammates on the sideline. And it was just like a real celebration to start the season. And from that moment, Vancouver just cruised, and, they're able to find a third goal. And then there's the red card moment, which I guess we could talk about a little bit, where it's a second yellow for simulation. There's questions if it could have been a penalty kick as well. Ultimately, it was already 3-1, and Alex, in the stadium, we kind of went, "Oh, that looked like a penalty." That was the first instinct, live reaction without replay. The more and more you saw it, it looks like he's on his way down really before any contact is initiated. And the conversation we were having in the little media area was, sometimes not all contact is a foul, and not every time you go to ground is simulation and yellow card. And it just felt like one of those instances where maybe there was a tiny bit of contact, but it wasn't really a foul, and going to ground may not have been simulation. My thoughts in the, having my impression live, seeing the replay was like, would have been great maybe if it had just been play on in that moment. But regardless, I don't know if it would have affected the final result, because Vancouver was cruising at that point. They had all the momentum, all the emotion, the support of the crowd behind them, and it kind of felt like Valor was out of ideas. For Phil Dos Santos and Valor, I feel like it's going to be a tough one, because they're on the road to start for an extended period. They have all these new players, like almost no one, where they got two players returning from last year, right? Like, it's they're struggling for an identity at the moment. I just don't know how they're going to perform consistently at a high level. That's a big question. And yeah, just it felt like Valor, after a good little push in the first half, they didn't have any response. And this Vancouver team, pretty multiple in terms of their attack. Diaz, Dyer, Caden Cheung, Paris G getting involved, Gabby Bitar, who the one guy not scoring on debut, a returning player, he missed a chance. He could have had two goals on the afternoon, but he did manage to convert. There's just, seeing defenders like David Norman Jr. get involved. There's a lot of different guys that can chip in offensively. And Rocco Romeo and David Norman at the back, they looked a little rusty. They looked like there wasn't fantastic communication early on, but they really sorted that out, and they kind of grew and grew as the match went on. And finally, I couldn't talk about this match without giving a shout out to my boy, Vasco Fry, who was just marshaling things from the number six spot. What Godby called him a king after the match, comparing him to, or not comparing him to, but kind of talking about the heydays of Real Madrid, and how there was, kind of the thankless number six that controlled all the puppets behind the scenes, even though he didn't receive the credit. And that's kind of what Vasco was doing in this match, just kind of keeping everyone organized, both defensively and then pinging balls, finding guys in attack. So I think exciting. We were very positive in our preview about what VFC could do this season, why we thought they were primed to take a serious step forward. And yes, it's against Valor, who everyone thinks is probably going to be the worst team in the CPL this season, but they had to go do it on opening day, and they did. So now they get to test themselves again against HFX on Thursday, and I think that's going to be a real test of whether this early showing is a sign of things to come.
Yeah, lots to take in from that. Just to note, Valor did only start two returnees, but they do have a decent amount of them, because like Juan Pablo Sanchez, I'm not sure, I think he came on. Jordan Haynes came on. That's a pair of returnees. Rafael Ojin didn't dress. That's a returnee. That's the club's new captain when he'll be healthy and in the lineup. We didn't see Marcelo Palisi, I guess, which is a bit of a surprise. The Vancouver boy in Vancouver would have been nice to see him get a shot, because I don't know, I always find him always puts in some good performances, and I feel like he could be a key piece for this Valor side. But I know they're dealing with some injuries, so yeah, that's gonna be something to manage, injuries to start the year, as well as everything for Valor. But no, as for Vancouver, it felt like they really clicked a lot, and I think one big key question we had was Alejandro Diaz. Where does he fit? Because last year, it felt like the runs he was making weren't getting picked up on. He was often isolated. What I found interesting is they'd constantly play two up front, with Diaz and Hundl, but then Diaz would be asked to be the guy to play the 9 and Hundl would be asked to play the 10, where you're kind of like, Hundl is the quick guy who can run the channels. Would you not want Hundl playing a bit more of a 9 and Diaz under? And interestingly, in this game, Diaz was a bit more of the 10 and Dyer was the guy running the channels. And fittingly, Diaz had 2 assists. He's got a creative game in him. He's kind of good where you can ask him to play a little deeper. I remember once in a Pacific game last year I was covering, or not last year because he wasn't there, but 2 years ago I was covering a Pacific game. James Merriman put in Alejandro Diaz at a number 8 for like a half. Like, he's got that sort of like good with his feet for a striker, can play a little deeper. And I wonder if we're going to see a lot more of Diaz this year. Maybe he's not going to score as much. That's probably looks like it might fall a bit more on Dyer and Bitar, but maybe that's going to be Diaz's strengths, where you're going to have to respect him because you give him too much space. This is still a former CPL Golden Boot winner. I think Diaz will find his way to score goals, but just look at the flick on the Dyer goal, the way he found space, flicked it. There's not many number nines would have the wherewithal and awareness to pull that off in that scenario. So I thought that was very something interesting to keep an eye on. And yeah, it's just fascinating to see all the pieces attack, that Paris G and Chung got forward so much, that Vasco Fry, he completed 8 out of 9 of his long balls, by the way. Like, he was just like chess maker supreme. Just, I see the pieces on my board and I will play it the way I want. Like, there's ingredients there. I'd say the only things I'd be wary for and something to watch, especially this week against a Halifax team that will probably bring a bit more danger and in different fashions, is they did open up the game a bit too much. And I think Valor just unfortunately weren't able to punish them in certain regards. And I think that could have changed the game. I think with Vancouver, it's good that they can go fast and open and they can score 4 goals now. Because those are what's nice about those goals is they were repeatable. Of course, maybe Paris G won't be hitting 40-yard screamers every game, but I could see a lot of that, like Diaz to Dyer link up. I could see Gabriel Bitar being ruthless as a cutback option if you make the right run. I can see Vancouver being more dangerous on set pieces because David Norman Jr. and Rocco Romeo average out to be about a combined 6'3" together between them. Like, that size, those are weapons you can aim at on set pieces. So I think the goals will be there. I'm just curious to see how they handle things defensively. But yeah, those were kind of the notes on Vancouver.
Well, the only thing I just add straight onto that is, yeah, I think the thing is, if you're playing a back four and Paris G and Caden Chung are at your fullback spots and they're getting forward in attack, there were moments straight up in this match where Vancouver FC just kind of left David Norman Jr. and Rocco Romeo at the back on their own. And it was like, all right, well, we're not under threat, so this is totally fine. You just wonder, how do they balance that as the season goes on? And I think that's because there's improved depth in this team this season, we're going to see different lineups. You know, Godby said he's not a huge fan of rotation, but he likes competition for spots. So I think they'll adjust throughout the season to their opponents. And they probably knew that they could maybe get away with some of this in this match. And again, I think just Halifax this Thursday night is going to be a good test, because they're going to face some more dangerous attacking weapons for sure.
Yeah, they have that depth. James Cameron didn't even dress. That's someone who was a U21 player of the Canada last year. He just didn't make the 18. That's a luxury that Afshin Gatbi can have, where he leaves out a Cameron and you look at their bench, there's good options there. And they left out an Elliot Simmons. That's someone who was like, he's someone you forget about and all this. A very good CPL midfielder. Brady McDonald, we talked about, also didn't dress at all. So that competition for spots, as long as Gatbi manages it right, and you know, he admitted it after the game, he's like, it's tough with competition because you have to strike a balance, whereas a coaching staff, you have to reward guys and be reconnaissant of, or you know, when these guys are pushing their own spots. So yeah, we'll see how it goes for that. But I think this Halifax game, if they can get a win from this and make it 6 from the first 2, that would put themselves in a great position, and I'm sure we'll see some rotation otherwise, because of course on the third sub we talked about both BC teams. Just some notes on the Pacific game, just because I was out there, of course. So it was at a bit of a weird time at 4 o'clock, especially if you're heading down to the Galaxy game. But for Pacific, just a couple other notes. One thing we mentioned about in the preview, what I was saying would be the big things they need to hit were goalkeeping and then the number nine. And I thought Emil Gazdov had one of his best games in a Pacific shirt. He made some great saves when the game was 1-0 to keep his team in it, including a beautiful one on Zach Fernandez, who reacted perfectly, got a hand down, paired it out for a corner, textbook stuff. He looked a lot more confident, and I think that would go a long way towards him, or towards this Pacific team continuing to grow, as have that growth there. Especially Pacific had a young backline and they did not look out of sorts, which again, it's like you mentioned earlier, credit to James Merriman as a tactician, that he's able to throw in these youngsters and that they know what the system is and how they were able to play. In particular, Ali Indom and Tomomir Jagr, the two veterans back there, one a vet of, you know, in his fifth season with Pacific now, in Tomomir Jagr, one who was playing their first CPL game, and Indom, you wouldn't be able to tell which is which because they both put in excellent shifts. So Indom looks to be a good signing. But yeah, up front, keep an eye on Rayon Moore. He was annoying. Like, he just looked like he made life so tough for Julian Dunn. Every time there'd be a ball, he'd be elbowing, he'd be pushing. He got a yellow card inside 25 minutes. But for him, it was probably worth it just because he was a pain in the butt all game. And fitting enough, he's the one who wins the penalty because he sneaks in behind Dunn, forces Dunn to take him down. Yes, Moore didn't get really much of a chance to score or show any of that scoring pedigree. But I like that because in a game where he didn't really get involved offensively, he was annoying. He was a presence. And that can be tough for as strikers, right? Sometimes you're not scoring. What are you doing out there? He made sure that he had a presence. And I think that's huge because they're going to need that from the number nine, especially that'll open up space for a Salouf to do a little more in open play. It'll open up room for Josh Hurd, who came off the bench in this game. It'll open room for Sean Young, who didn't get to push as much forward as you'd like to see. And for, of course, Dario Zanata, who had some decent moments, but I think looked like he could still hit another gear. But I really liked Rayon Moore. So that's something I'll keep an eye on Pacific. So those were a few question marks we had in our preview last week.
I mean, needless to say, very good opening weekend for the BC CPL sides. And, you know, I mentioned VFC versus Halifax in the week already, but then Pacific versus Valor Friday night over on the island. I mean, Alex, you were talking about Vancouver FC looking for all 6 points. Pacific has to feel at least in the driver's seat to come away from the first two weekends of CPL play, you know, at least tied top of the table, because they put themselves in a good position.
Yeah, I mean, look, two games at home. You're playing a Valor team coming off a 4-1 drubbing. Clearly confidence is working its way up there. This is like, for Vancouver, beating Halifax is a statement. For Pacific, the level of team they are, the mentality in this group, this feels like this for them should be a given. But of course, I think also at the same time, they're going to get a frustrated Valor side. And I think that sometimes can be where a team like that can get the most out of themselves, is knowing like, oh, we really... It's funny to say after a 4-1 loss, but the game was there for Valor. So maybe they'll think, all right, like, let's clean up what we missed against Vancouver. We opened up the game a bit too much. Maybe they might feel that Pacific don't have the same weapons that Vancouver has, where it was Diaz, it was Dyer, it was Batar, Fisk. Then it was Kantave coming off the bench, Chung Ji, like, it was relentless, right? Pacific does have a darn good attack, but maybe Valor will feel like, all right, let's clean things up. It's still like something where they have a bit more of a chance. It'll be interesting to see. But yes, as you mentioned, Sam, two big ones this weekend. A bit of a switcheroo, funnily enough. I know Halifax stayed out in the island for a couple of days before heading out to Vancouver and then out to Langley, because then they'll head home for them. And of course, Valor did the same, staying and then going out to Langford. So a bit of a swap. You got Vancouver, Halifax Thursday night. If you're able to head out to Willoughby Community Park for that one, should be a good one. VFC wearing their famous pink kits for the first time. Meanwhile, on Friday, if you're heading out to Victoria, should be a beautiful weekend. The weather report looks lovely. A Sunday night kickoff is going to hit beautifully at Starlight Stadium for Pacific versus Valor. So yeah, it's going to be a good weekend for that in BC. And for those who are curious about the other games, it's all spread out. It's one game each day this weekend. So you have Thursday, you have Friday, and then you have Saturday will be Atletico versus Cavalry. That one never disappoints. Those are two fierce teams that just seem to, I think of last year's game where Willy Accio scored in like the 96th minute, ran up to the Ottawa fans, and it was just carnage. So that game, those games are never boring. And then on Sunday, You have a 9:05 derby between York and Forge, the two close Ontario rivals going at each other. So good weekend of action on tap. I can't wait.
Should be fantastic. I'm looking forward to tucking in. I'll be at Willoughby on Thursday night, and then I'll be watching the Whitecaps from home. Not gonna make the trip down to Seattle, but we might as well just, this is pretty much the end of the show, but we're gonna kick it to Alex here, because you're doing everything this weekend, not just the Whitecaps, not just VFC, not just Pacific, but a quadfecta of Pacific Northwest matches this weekend. So why don't you take the listener through it?
Yeah, I know it's a beautiful weekend, and sometimes you look at things and you realize they all align. This weekend it can end up being a beautiful one. And hey, I don't know if I'll be the, there's a couple of us that are doing it, our friends, so I won't be doing it alone. But yes, on Thursday I'll be heading out to Willoughby. I'll be on that one for one soccer, head covering that game. Should be a good one. Head home. Friday, I'm on that game, Pacific Valor for CPL. I was on Pacific Halifax this weekend, so I'll be getting another close look at Pacific. I decided to head out, but because it's a 7:00 kick, you have to stay. And I was thinking, oh, like the Whitecaps play in Seattle on Saturday. I'd love to go because they play in, of course, May long weekend. I'm unavailable to go down to Seattle for that one for another reason. So I'm like, I want to go to Seattle. It's the last Cap Seattle game I went to was 2019. Last time I went to a Seattle game was the Champions League final in 2022. It'd be nice to head down to Seattle. And I realized, like, oh, if I go to Victoria, I have to stay overnight. It's a 7:00 kick. Physically can't, because the last ferry's at like 9. So unless I left at like the 45th minute, which I can't because I'm working it, I'm going to have to crash in Victoria, which I love doing. It's always nice. Got a couple friends out there. Great times, like great place to hang out for a night or two. Realized, oh yeah, there's one great thing about Victoria is there's these ferries down to Seattle. What if there's a world where we time it right, we take a ferry from Victoria to Seattle? Turns out it is a possibility. So we're then gonna go from Victoria down to Seattle on the ferry. I think it's gonna be stunning. It's gonna be great weather. I've never done it, but I've heard the views are great. Then you get a second ferry right into downtown Seattle, which is gonna be, like, I'm actually so pumped for it. Like, I just love little things like that. I've been to Seattle so many times, but I've never been to that side of Seattle or taken the ferry. Then I'll get tucked in. Whitecaps Sounders. That'll be a great match. Hopefully great crowd. And then Sunday, I didn't even realize that originally our plan was just to go and then leave Saturday night. But then I checked the schedule. The Seattle Reign host Chicago Red Stars Sunday, 3:00. Perfect. Like, perfect. Couldn't have planned for it better. Like, the only thing I could have asked for more is a 1:00 kick, but it's not like a 7:00 kick. We can literally get tucked in to some Quinn, some Jordan Hoytema for the Canadians, but also some other ballers on that Seattle team, like a Bethany Ballstra. I'll be excited to see her, play live, or some of the other players they have. And then the Chicago Red Stars, they've got a pretty good collection of players. That'll be at 3:00, and then just head home after. So we're calling it the 4-4. Footballogy stats are going to be certainly peaking a lot after that. I might feel just absolutely like a zombie after, but looking forward to it, because how often can you tuck into 4 different professional games across 3 different leagues, all involving somewhat local teams? I think it's going to be a very fun journey and fun adventure at the very least, no matter what ends up happening in any of those 4 games.
Yeah, I admire your creativity on that one. It's an impressive plan, and I'm sure it'll be an enjoyable one. So look forward to following along. I'll be with you for the first leg of the journey, but that's as far as I can go. So check out Alex on Twitter, X, whatever it's called for that, as well as all the other social channels to follow along as he takes on the quad this weekend. Alex, any final thoughts here before we sign off? I mean, that was opening weekend to CPL, Vancouver Whitecaps, and looking forward to a busy but exciting weekend ahead.
Yeah, no, it should be a good one. The weather's been great. Feels like it's finally starting to push towards summer, and a lot of great footy. So nice to have the CPL back. Want to get tucked in. Nice to have a hybrid weekend of tucked in CPL and MLS. Was a bit, tough that It was all at the same time this past weekend, so I missed the Caps Galaxy game, but I think this Caps Seattle game, especially if the Caps can break that slump in Seattle, I think it would be a good vibe for them. And of course, I'm excited to see my first Seattle Reign game and tick that one off. So no, it's super excited for what's to come. You can find me, as you mentioned, on Twitter at Alex Gungiruzic, on Blue Sky as well there. Meanwhile, on Threads and Instagram at AGR on the case. Super excited for all of this. And yeah, for all those who've enjoyed the podcast, again, make sure to leave a review or a like or a comment, any of that sorts. It all means a lot. And we, at the very end, we do appreciate you tuning in and listening. That's always means a lot to see people coming and hearing us just shoot the breeze about whatever is going on in BC soccer. Because there was a lot this weekend, and we'll certainly be back for more next week.
You can find me, as always, at Samuel_Roboat on Twitter, at thirdsub.ca, for all our regular pre- and post-match coverage and all that good stuff. I really appreciate I think we had a comment or two on the podcast feeds about congrats on the 200th episode. So just shout out to whoever you are out there that gave us the little congrats. We appreciate that. And yeah, just, you know, if you have a question, you want to leave a like, leave a review. We're always there to interact with you and to tuck into any thoughts you might have on all the topics we cover on the show. So we hope you enjoyed this episode. And as Alex mentioned, we'll be back again in the week with more. So we'll chat again soon.